Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. And your friends and family can stream online that way if they're outside of our listening area as well. Today is March 25th, 2015. Last week, Rod Young hosted, and thank you very much, Rod.
You're welcome.
Who's here again. And he had as his guest, Jackie Cornelius. Jackie's an EA and CFP, and they talked about using your tax return for financial planning, and they did a great job. Tonight, Rod is back again with me, my partner in exhaustion during tax season. And tonight, we're opening up the phone lines to the listeners. So get pencil and paper ready. And if you have tax questions, run and get them. Jot them down. You can call in. We are live. We'll take your questions live. Or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can always give your question to Judy Ann, who's in the studio with us, and she'll write it down and bring it in to us. You can stay anonymous if you like, but we love questions and we love talking with folks. So again, the lines are open tonight for tax questions. That is the topic tonight, listeners' tax questions. And you're welcome to call. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We do discuss general financial planning topics, as we mentioned, not specific investments. And while we do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and we will do our best to answer them. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. As I mentioned, Rod is here with us. He's a CPA also and a CFP also, and a financial advisor at Valley National Financial Advisors, and runs Executive Edge at the firm. And he is a frequent guest host here for me. He's my go-to guy.
Particularly this month.
Yes, he's very graciously volunteered. And I'm telling you, Rod's under extreme stress as well this time of year, and graciously had offered to kind of come help support.
Great to be here with you, Lori.
Support
Thanks.
The cause. I really appreciate it. One of the things Rod and Jackie had talked about last week was a little bit about some things that were going on in the stock market. So let me mention that the Dow was down again. And folks, by the way, that does happen from time to time. It goes down and occasionally it goes up too. So up and down, up and down. And as such, the Dow went down to 17,718, the NASDAQ at 4,876, and the S&P at 2,061. And you had mentioned something about Apple last week?
Yeah, last Wednesday, after the close of the market, Apple joined the Dow Jones Industrial Average in place of AT&T. So I thought tonight I could give a quick one-week update on Apple in the Dow,
okay,
if we have a moment to do that.
Okay.
And so when Apple joined the Dow last Wednesday night, it was at $128.47 a share. It is now, it closed today with the market down at $123.38 a share. So since it joined the Dow, it's down $5.09, or a little over 3%. So, again, not an indication of where Apple's going long term. I just thought it'd be interesting to give the one-week update on Apple on the Dow.
Yeah. So people could sit and watch that. Rod, we also happened, and I know you might have wanted to talk about AT&T, but we have a caller on line one.
Great.
We have Joni. Joni, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Good. How can we help you?
Well, I was preparing the taxes for my parents, mm-hmm. and they have two pensions. And I would just have a general question about whether or not pensions are taxable in Pennsylvania, for Pennsylvania state.
Yeah, and so the general answer to the question, it's a great question, is Pennsylvania does not tax retirement income. So pensions, distributions from 401k plans, withdrawals from IRAs are generally not taxable for Pennsylvania, particularly if it's legitimately a distribution to someone. You said it was your parents, so someone who is retired and over age 59 and a half and taking their retirement income, not taxable in Pennsylvania.
Okay, well, thank you. I really appreciate that.
Okay, thanks, Joni. Thanks
Glad
for
to
calling.
Help.
Take care. Folks, if you have questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and that's what we're doing. We're taking tax questions tonight. So again, 610-758-8810. You can call live on air or off air. As a follow-up to that, we said generally, we know when someone's retired, it's not taxable, and typical retirement accounts, pensions, IRAs, 401ks. Occasionally, we might see that it is. And why would that be?
If it's not a distribution, really on account of being retired. So if it's an early distribution that may be subject to a penalty on your federal tax return, it's going to show up as taxable on your Pennsylvania return. But you even have to be very careful about that, because part of the issue would be what, if any, basis for Pennsylvania tax purposes. In other words, what you've put into the particular account that's generating the distribution. Your basis is, you can recover that. It's not taxable for Pennsylvania purposes until you've withdrawn all the money out that you put in.
Yeah, and folks, so that's another reason Rod and I have said in the past about keeping tax returns forever. Sometimes you might have to go back and look at those pay stubs to see what contributions you made, because you don't know if maybe in 15 years you might have to take some money out of that retirement account. And unless you can prove that you put in those original contributions, Pennsylvania will tax it as if it was earnings.
Sure. Maybe you're going to end up taxing your IRA, 401k or something, maybe for college for one of your kids. We hope you don't have to do that. But if you do, knowing what you put in and keeping great records for a long time will pay off for you.
Yeah. And again, that's when we're talking exceptions, like very early kind of withdrawals. We have another caller. Great. We have Jacqueline on line two. Jacqueline, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
Thanks for listening and thanks for calling. What's your question?
I have kind of a two-part question about being a student.
Okay.
And I've been a student for the last few years, and I got pretty good tax returns at the end of the year because, I guess as a student, I just had a good returns, and then because I had a little side business on the. It just worked out that way. So, but then this year I was student for the fall, but not for this semester.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, and it really changed my tax status. In other words, I ended up most of last year being a student without, I had unemployment income. And then I had basically living on student loans. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of a tax return this year.
Jacqueline, let's kind of clarify this a little bit. So is your question being a student affecting you? Or because here's some of the things that do affect students. Number one, typically we'll see undergraduate students are continue to be dependents on their parents' tax returns.
Okay.
And then the parents may get some benefits on that for education credits and things like that,
depending on what their income is. And
Then other times we have students who are lifetime learners who are in graduate school, and they may be getting lifetime learning credits. But the only time you're really going to get like a good return on your tax return, a refund, is if you've paid taxes in or if you qualify for some other kind of credit, like an earned income credit or an education
right.
credit or something like that. Right. So what is your question exactly?
So my question is, okay, I think I understand what was different from the previous years to this year, but next year I am actually in grad school and I'll be getting a stipend. So how does that affect my taxes for next year as a student, that I'll be getting a stipend for graduate work, and how, you know, is that going to affect my taxes in such a way that I'll be paying in Texas, so I will get money back from that?
Yeah, I mean, the stipend, typically when you see a stipend for graduate students, the stipend is going to be taxable income for you. Typically, it's a stipend that you're then using to pay your living expenses and,
correct.
You know, and what have you. So that is, the stipend itself will be taxable income to you.
What happens, Jacqueline, typically if the graduate program is paying you something like that, and we're seeing more of this, they'll give you literature to follow along, because sometimes what we find is they're going to tell you they're not going to issue you a W-2 that usually you get as an employee. Sometimes, and it depends as you go through grad school, sometimes they will issue a W-2 for some of the pay. But certain of those monies you receive as a grad student, as Rod mentioned, will be taxable, but it's not going to be on a W-2, and you have to report it on line 7 as wages, but it's not necessarily subject to the Medicare or Social Security tax, but you're going to be responsible for paying estimated taxes for federal. And then some of the graduate programs in Pennsylvania then will not be taxable for Pennsylvania or taxable for city. It depends. So you really have to rely on your program to guide you and provide guidance on what might be a taxable portion, because sometimes it's from grants, sometimes the money comes from the college itself, and it might all have a little bit of a different flavor, whether you're working for it, whether it's covering, as Rod said, living expenses or tuition. So there's lots of moving parts with that, so you want to make sure your program will give you some guidance.
And one other quick pointer on it, IRS publication 970, I believe it is the publication on dealing with all of your costs associated with higher education, and I think it has a section in there regarding grants and that kind of thing.
Okay.
Right. Well, I think are scholarships then taxable as well?
Scholarships themselves typically are not taxable, and that's used to directly pay the cost of your education, you know, the tuition and the required fees and books and that kind of thing. But the stipend towards your living expenses, that's the important distinction, is typically taxable.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, Jacqueline,
so
thank you for calling. Folks, okay. If you have questions, the number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
And welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices, and I have with me this evening guest host Rod Young, also a CPA and CFP. We're taking listeners' tax questions. If you have tax questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We've already had a couple calls, which
great calls. Thank you.
We love it. Lots of fun, and it's interesting because it does kind of demonstrate how complicated some of this can be. I mean, it's
even something like a graduate student's stipend is not straightforward.
It's not. I had to do an Excel spreadsheet to kind of see the taxation on one I just did recently. It was just a little bit of a nightmare. Before we continue taking listeners' questions, and again, you can call in 610-758-8810, talk on air or off air, although it's a lot more fun to talk on air. Rod, we were talking at the top of the show about the changes in the Dow, how Apple came in and AT&T went out. And since Apple's been in, it went down, you know, $5, but, you know, the market's down anyway. How did AT&T do?
AT&T is down as well. So AT&T, not on the Dow any longer, is down a little less than a dollar, about 2.9% over that time period. Apple down 3.9% over that time period. Again, not an indication at all of where they're going in the future. Just a little bit of trivia about 1 week after Apple joined the Dow.
So, and that Dow is just a basket of stocks to kind of measure some element of how the market's going. It doesn't mean it's not trading or anything anymore. We had another, we have a couple other calls, one on air and one off air. So we have Amy on line two. Amy from Nazareth. Amy, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate all the feedback that you provide, everyone.
Sure, thanks.
My questions regarding post-secondary education and its effect on my tax return. I am receiving a second bachelor's degree, and this question always gets me when I go to do my tax return. Am I no longer eligible for the education credit because it is my second degree?
There's two different education credits. There's the American Opportunity Credit, and then there's the Lifetime Learning Credit. And I believe you're going to be eligible for the Lifetime Learning Credit.
For sure.
I believe the American Opportunity Credit is you're allowed to take that for 4 years.
Right.
Okay.
So if you have already taken it for 4 years, then just switch over to, it's not quite as generous a credit, but switch over to the lifetime learning credit.
Okay. And then if you were under like your parents' tax return, like you mentioned before, a lot of traditional college students are, they might not have pulled that American credit for you. So you might be able to apply for that again, correct?
That is a very good question. And I just had that circumstance where I had to ask the person who is now in graduate school, was not in graduate school, was working still on at a bachelor's level. How many years had their parents claimed the American Opportunity Credit? And so if you find out that that was not claimed for you four times, I believe that you would be able to continue to take that American Opportunity Credit.
Are you at least a half-time student, Amy?
Yes.
Okay, good, because I think that's one of the criteria.
That
you have
is,
to be
yes.
at least a half-time student and working toward your four-year, you know, a four-year degree.
Right.
So I would think.
Okay, excellent. And then just one final question, when obviously I like to learn. So when I continue on to my graduate studies, would that still be the lifelong learner's credit?
It would be. There's no, you know, expiration of that, no number of years that you're limited to. So
just an income limitation, depends on how much money you're making.
Yes.
That could limit you.
Okay,
eventually.
Excellent.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate it.
Great, Amy.
Yep,
thanks. Good luck.
Thanks. Take care.
Take care. Now, we also had Sheila call in, and Sheila asked a question. Charitable contributions every year, $500 to $600 per year. Who is able to deduct since it never gets to the large enough amount? How much does one have to give, and how is it deductible?
Okay. So I'm kind of reading between the lines on this question, whether or not you itemize your deductions or not on your tax returns. So a quick refresher on that. You are allowed to deduct on your tax return the larger of your standard deduction or your itemized deductions. So you have to add up all your itemized deductions: real estate taxes, mortgage interest, state and local income taxes, charitable contributions, add them all up. Compare them to the standard deduction for your filing status, married, joint, single, whichever number's greater you take. So if you are typically taking the standard deduction, then there's no place really to deduct the charitable contributions until you get get above that standard deduction amount.
Yeah, Sheila, you might be thinking of back in the day, we used to get a charitable deduction on page 2 of our tax return. Do you remember that, Rod?
That was a
even
while
if
ago.
We didn't itemize.
Yes, yes, that's
so
gone.
So that's been gone for a while. So one of the other things is if you're always kind of just at the border of itemizing, Sheila, we suggest thinking about doing something called piggybacking your deductions. So if you do $500 every year, and that's keeping you from itemizing, but you're right on the cusp, you could do $1,000 one year, none the next year, $1,000 the next year, none the next year. You know, bunch those
deductions. And the standard deduction amounts are $12,400 for married joint and, $6,200 for single. So you got to get over those amounts.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Sheila. Helen, we have a call from you as well, but we're ready for our next break. So we'll answer that question when we come back from our next break. The phone number, 610-758-8810. We're having so much fun.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, call 610-694-8100, extension 6, or visit our website, wdiy.org.
And welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, CPA-CFP, with Rod Young, CPA-CFP, and we are taking tax questions. And I have to say, go girl power, because all of our callers tonight have been women.
There you go.
Yes.
Come on, guys.
We love being informed. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And tonight's show is Listeners Tax Questions. So you can call, talk, live on air with us or off air, as Helen did. And Helen called in and she asked a question about an IRA. And she said, what happens if someone gets retirement accounts from a divorce settlement? Is that taxable when you take the money out? And there could be two pieces to this. So, Rod, if you want to start, I'll throw in some extra stuff.
Sure. I'll start just in general. Yeah, anytime you take you withdraw money out of a retirement account, it's typically taxable income to you unless for some reason it's a Roth IRA, for example, then any withdrawals out of a Roth are potentially not taxable. So the general answer to your question, Helen, is yes. Even if it's a retirement account that's come to you in a divorce, that it still is going to be taxable when you take the money out.
And one of the things that Judy Ann had written down for us, because you're off air, so we have to interpret a couple things. You said an IRA question. So the assumption was that this is out of an IRA, and as Rod said, yes, it's income taxable. But there could be another element here, and I always like adding the extra element, it's sometimes what you don't know, which is if you are under age 59 and a half, Helen, and you take money out of the IRA incident to divorce, you will still have a penalty, a 10% penalty for early withdrawal if you take it out before age 59 and a half. That's in an IRA. For folks who have a quadro, qualified domestic relations order, where they've split a 401k, there is an exception to the 10% penalty if you're under age 59 and a half. So I quite often will caution women who are thinking of divorce, going through a divorce, if you are getting assets through the quadro and those assets are 401k and you're not sure how you're going to do with your cash flow, I'll suggest keeping it in the 401k for a while in case you have to take the money out. At least you won't have to pay the 10% penalty.
Right. So what happens if you roll that over, if you get advice to, Joe, yeah, just take that now and roll it over to an IRA and then you need to access it, you've just turned that, cost yourself 10%.
Right. Yeah. So, be aware. Now, you also had a second question, Rod. She asked, do you claim the preparation fees for taxes as a deduction?
Yeah, yes, you can, but there's a threshold. So actually, there's a couple ways to deduct tax preparation fees. So the typical way for most people would be if you itemize your deductions, and we were just talking about itemizing a little while ago, there's a category of deductions called miscellaneous deductions. The total of all of those miscellaneous deductions, which includes tax return preparation fees, if it exceeds 2% of your gross of your adjusted gross income, then you can deduct the excess. Another possible way to deduct your tax preparation fees, or at least a portion of your tax preparation fee, is if you are self-employed and file a Schedule C on your tax mm-hmm. return and report your income and your expenses from your business, then some of that tax preparation fee can be deducted as a business expense on Schedule C.
Or a rental property, Schedule E.
Schedule E on a rental property, good point.
And yes. I've seen sometimes returns come in, new clients are coming in, and we'll look at their prior year tax returns, and I'll go right to the professional fees line mm-hmm. on the Schedule
sure.
C and on the Schedule E saying, oh, your prior preparer did not. Because quite often we see preparation fees not deductible on Schedule A because people are over those thresholds.
Because of that threshold,
so
sure.
You definitely want to look if you have any of those other categories. So, Helen, I hope we helped answer those questions. Folks, if you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're taking listeners' questions. That is our topic tonight. So Rod and I get questions all the time, and we're going to talk about those in just a minute. But I wanted to go back to itemizing and the miscellaneous itemized deductions for a moment, because one thing that I've seen a couple people miss is when they have asset management fees, they're paying it their advisor to give them advice. And Rod, sometimes I'll see those fees look a little high to me and I say, what's going on here?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they've added up all their fees. So that's one thing. We're going to talk about what that means in a minute, because
yep.
you might say, gosh, I'm paying fees. Why can't I take them all? We're going to talk about why you might not be able to take them all. And the other reason, the other thing I look for is, do they have tax exempt income in tax exempt investments in that money that's being managed? So let's talk about, even though we're looking at Schedule A and itemized deductions and miscellaneous deductions, that's still not even the end of the story.
That's right. That's right. And so to your point, so these fees to their advisor, there's a couple reasons those fees may not be deductible as part of those miscellaneous expenses. One would be if it's fees associated with what you just mentioned, tax-exempt income. You cannot take a deduction for expenses associated with income that's not taxable. And so how do you figure out what portion of your fees is related to the tax-exempt income versus the taxable portion of your portfolio? And you ask your advisor to provide you with that, you know, with that calculation. Another area where we see is people are having both their taxable accounts and their retirement accounts managed, and they're paying fees in both. And so if these are fees that are taken and paid from a retirement account, you can't put those on Schedule A as part of your miscellaneous itemized deductions. That's a no-no.
It's a no-no because you're not taking the money out of your IRA. If you took the money out of your IRA and paid it, you say, oh, that's a good idea. I'll do that so I can get the deduction. No, 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 no. Because let's pretend your fees are $1,000 and you pay it directly out of the IRA. You're not getting a deduction for that. But if you took $1,000 out of your IRA to pay it, you'd pay income tax on the $1,000
right.
and get the
deduction.
But it's a yeah. miscellaneous itemized deduction subject to limitations, which you may never get. So I like when if folks do have asset management fees coming out of their accounts for retirement accounts, we like to see it come right out of the retirement account typically. Okay, so miscellaneous itemized deductions, itemizing, standard deduction, lots of little elements and nuances to that. Folks, we are taking your questions tonight, tax questions, income tax questions. Let's get those tax returns done. The lines are open for you. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with us or off air, whatever is more comfortable. That is 610-758-8810. 8810. We're at the halfway mark. We still have another half hour if you have questions. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
And welcome back. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. Tonight, we have Rod Young, CPA, CFP, financial advisor, and runs Executive Edge at Valley National Financial. So we are taking listeners' questions this evening on taxes, income taxes, whatever questions you might have regarding financial choices. But in Definitely. Particular, it's kind of fun to talk about taxes this time of year.
The clock is ticking and April 15th is almost here.
Yeah, stop reminding me. So the phone number is 610-758-8810 and questions also through the website at yourfinancialchoices.com. So do you want to talk about some of the kinds of typical questions?
Sure.
We
can go. We get asked, as you well know, you know, we get asked all kinds of questions, and you know, and it's great because that's what we're here for. But there are questions that seem to be kind of recurring types of questions that we get asked quite a bit, and I thought it would be good to kind of talk about a few of those. And so, and one we're getting quite a bit of more recently, it seems, is this whole idea of when you sell your principal residence, is there anything you need to report on your tax return related to that? How do you handle that? And it used to be we, you know, pretty almost ignore it. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of people now, even on the sale of their principal residence, are being issued a tax document, a 1099-S, mm-hmm. that reports the amount that they sold the home for. And that doesn't make the sale necessarily taxable, but it means you should put it on your tax return or you can expect a letter from the IRS.
So you put it on your tax return, kind of report, you know, what you think you paid for it. And as long as the gain isn't more than the exclusion amount.
Right. $500,000 if you're joint and $250,000 if you're single. And as long as you've, you know, owned, occupied it two of the preceding 5 years as your principal residence, you're good to go in terms of it not being a taxable event, but you should still report it on the tax return.
Yeah, if you get the 1099-S, because the IRS won't know.
They won't know, and they'll assume you sold it, had no cost basis in it, and the whole thing is gain. So
let's talk about keeping tax records, because we already tonight had a call where they were asking if something was taxable, pensions taxable for Pennsylvania, 401ks, you know, early distributions is basically where we might see that income included on Pennsylvania.
Definitely.
So let's talk about keeping tax records.
Yeah, and I get
some of the reasons for that.
Sure, and I get asked this question every, you know, multiple times a year. How long should I keep my records? And here's what I generally tell people: keep copies of your tax returns indefinitely. Just keep a file with those. And do we have a call, Lori?
He's off air, but
do you want to respond to that? And then we'll
sure. Yeah. We have Brian in the car. He says, "Hello, Rod."
Okay.
And it's a question for Rod. And the question is, I am a corrections officer, and I want, yay, a guy called, though. We're really excited. Maybe that's why he's saying hello to Rod. I'm a corrections officer, and I want to know if I buy my own gear, such as boots, et cetera, is there a limit to what can be deducted?
That's a great question. So if you're buying gear and even, you know, certain types of clothing and
uniforms,
what have you, uniforms and what
uniforms.
Have you, yep, that you can't generally use and wear outside of your, you know, outside of your job, they're absolutely deductible. There's no limit that I'm aware of
no
to that.
That's why it's a good question.
It is a good question.
Not aware of that
either. And there's as long as it is, you know, a legitimate, ordinary purchase for the line of work that you're in, I do not believe there would be any limit. It is part of those miscellaneous itemized deductions that we've been talking about tonight, Brian, on Schedule A of your tax return, but then also on as an unreimbursed employee business expense for Pennsylvania purposes.
And local.
And local as well. Local. So I don't believe there's no hard and fast limit. It's just got to be a legitimate purchase for what you do. And then it's potentially going to give you a deduction for federal, Pennsylvania, and local. Great. Good question.
And since Brian's called, and hopefully he's still listening too, the other thing is, if he's a corrections officer, I'm wondering if he has to travel around to different locations. Because, Brian, I'm not sure if you're aware, if not commuting miles, but business miles, where you're having to go from location to location while you're at work,
sure,
track your miles, and you could get a deduction for that as well.
Yeah, I would. I don't know the IRS publication number off the top of my head, but if you Google IRS publication miscellaneous deductions and unreimbursed, employee expenses, you'll get a lot of information there, Brian, on what you can deduct.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Brian. Folks, if you guys have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. The first half hour was the women, and the second half hour is going to be
maybe
the men.
We'll see.
Go, girls. 610-758-8810. So we're talking about some of the other kinds of questions we get. So keeping tax returns, we talked about indefinitely. Some of the extra support.
Sure. The extra support, I typically tell people keep 5 years worth of records, including the current year. I'm not sure what you typically tell people, Lori, but that's what I do. But then there's certain records that you're going to need to keep longer. And those are records related to assets that you own, like your house, like a rental property or a second home. You're going to want to keep the records related to that property until years after you've sold it. So, 4 years after you've sold that property.
Do you know what? That's a great point too, Rod, because you just mentioned including your home, because here's something that happens sometimes that people don't always anticipate. Let's say you bought a home 20 years ago. You're getting older. You're not liking the winters up here so much. So you decide to buy a house down in Florida. But you think, I want to keep the family home just in case. Mm-hmm. But I think I'll turn it into a rental. Folks, if you're going to have a rental property that maybe you had used previously as a principal residence, you're going to want to have those records, because then you have the opportunity to depreciate that asset. But the value to depreciate it at is the lower of cost or market. So you have to know your cost in that circumstances. And a lot of us, we don't think that's going to happen. So another reason to keep records, because we see people converting their homes or vice versa, rentals to home and homes to rentals. So you want to make sure you're keeping track of all those records.
Yep.
What else do we see?
We asked lots of questions about tax records, like we just talked about. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a new one that's just come up. And that is letters that the IRS are now sending out to verify your identity, to verify that a return there's been a big problem, and it's been getting bigger over the past few years about fraudulently filed tax returns claiming fraudulent refunds. The IRS is seeing more and more of it, and they're doing their best to put in controls to try to combat it. And so they now have a kind of an identity, who are you kind of letter that they're sending out to confirm that a return that has been submitted is truly legitimate. And so keep an eye out that you're not definitely going to get one of those letters, but you might.
Right. And we had a client who got one, and he responded, and they said, if it's really you, you're okay, but it really wasn't. So it was a good letter. Yeah. We were glad that we found it. We have a caller on line one. We have CB. CB, can you hear us?
Yes.
Hi, how are you?
Yes, I can hear you.
Good.
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. How can we help you?
Hopefully this is a simple one for the two of you. So 401k distribution. So when I retire and start drawing down on my 401k, for Pennsylvania state tax, income tax purposes, is that a taxable event?
For Pennsylvania, no, that is not taxable, assuming you're taking it out on the account of retirement and you're, you know, 55 years old or beyond.
Okay.
Not taxable.
All right. I just wanted to confirm that. But for federal purposes, that is a taxable event, right? Because...
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I just wanted to check that.
Okay great, CB. Thank you. Bye-bye. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. And again, it was the women the first half hour and the men are calling the second half hour. But do you want to expound on his question?
Real quickly, I'm just going to point, not only is it not Pennsylvania taxable, but it's not subject to that local tax as well. Because it's not considered earned income, it's not subject to the local earned income
tax.
And
we get questions about that local quite often. People don't understand local earned income means earned income.
Earned income, W-2 income or self-employment income, yes.
Not rentals.
Not rentals, not investments.
Not limited partnership
investments.
Not retirement,
yes. Okay. Correct.
All right. So we were talking about the fraudulent tax returns the IRS is getting, and they've instituted certain measures to catch those, and they, I think, are doing a good job. I've heard that they've caught already a lot of you know, returns, and you just have to follow the letter when you get it. The IRS will never, ever call you. There's still lots of phone call scams going on, so please don't respond to those. We do get calls from clients about that. Oh, the IRS called me. Is it a scam or is it real? And it's surprising because they sound so legitimate. That it confuses
right.
even sophisticated taxpayers, you know?
It's very unusual for the IRS to call.
Yeah.
So if somebody's calling saying and making it sound like it's an official phone call from the IRS, chances are it's not.
It's not. Unless you've already been corresponding with the IRS and provided your phone number and you're expecting them to call.
Yes.
Folks, if you have questions, income tax questions, we're here live. You can talk on air or off air. The phone number is 610-758-8810. Rod, one of the things we see quite often when we're preparing tax returns is someone may have made a contribution to an IRA or a Roth IRA, or may be thinking about doing a contribution to an IRA or a Roth IRA. Lots of questions around those. So
yes.
What kind of things do we need to watch out for in that?
With either the Roth IRA or a traditional IRA, but we see this happen quite a bit. Somebody makes a Roth IRA contribution during the year, gets to the end of the year, starts to work on their tax returns, and all of a sudden realizes that they made too much money and are not allowed to make all, you know, maybe a portion or all of that Roth IRA contribution. And so they, you know, I get asked a lot, what do I do? And so you do get an opportunity to recharacterize that is one thing you can do, recharacterize it from one type of IRA to another. Or what you can do is have it be, you know, kind of recharacterize it to the push it into the next year.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that your income is going to be lower for the next year, or worst case scenario, if you can and you want to do this by April 15th, is take the money out of the Roth, and you'll have to pull out the earnings on it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you made a full contribution and have to take it out, and maybe you made a few hundred dollars, the few hundred dollars will be taxable income to you.
Mm-hmm.
But taking the money back out, there's no tax consequences of that. Okay.
You know, I had a case recently where someone had made a contribution and I caught it before we filed their tax return. We had them take it out, $6,500. What was it? I don't remember now if it was a Roth. It must have been a traditional IRA because I caught it, didn't take it. They had made it, didn't take it. By the time she took it out, though, it had actually made $500. So then in the current year, we got a 1099-R. I knew I had already never took the deduction on 2013. 1099-R shows a distribution of $6,500. I think her IRA contribution had been $6,000. So now we have a 1099-R with $6,500. So the $500 was all earnings.
Mm-hmm.
So under age 59 and a half, question would be, is it subject to the 10% penalty? My position was
no.
Because we recharacterized it in time. And so it was just pure earnings, not a withdrawal of IRA monies.
Exactly,
okay?
Yes.
So what happens, though, is sometimes your tax documents will be coded in such a way that if you enter it into software, you might not have the proper reporting of it. So you've got to...
Got to know how to work the software and really know what the end result should be on the tax return so that you can get that, you know, make sure you're getting that result.
Yeah. So it's lovely to have April 15th to kind of fix things and correct things, folks, though. We don't get that opportunity too often. If you're someone who's always on the edge, then you know what? Wait each year because you can always make a contribution up till April 15th for the prior year rather than, you know, having to fix all the time. We're taking our last break. Love the calls. Love the questions. If you have any, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services, including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You're tuned to WDIY Allentown, and you are listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Siebert. Currently 39 degrees in the Lehigh Valley, going to a low of 38, so we're only 1 degree away from that. A 40% chance of showers tonight. Tomorrow, Thursday, a 70% chance of showers, thunderstorms, also possible afternoon, areas of fog before noon, otherwise cloudy, with a high near 63 degrees. Are we ready for 63 degrees? Mm-hmm. Yes, we are. Yes. Thursday night, a 60% chance of showers, possibly a thunderstorm, with a low around 40. Friday, a 20% chance of showers before noon, mostly cloudy, high near 49. And Friday night, a low around 28 degrees. Saturday, partly sunny, with a high near 39 degrees. Lori and sidekick Rod, I have a question for you.
Okay.
I remember in my misspent youth somewhere along the line that they changed the date for filing for taxes from March 15th to April 15th. Are you old enough to remember that?
No.
I am not.
All right.
Okay.
That just dates me.
Yeah.
I'm saying it was the 1950s sometime.
Yeah. Yeah. I did not know that.
Okay, folks, we're in the last 15 minutes, well, last 13 minutes or so of the show. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and the score is 5-2. Five women calling in the first half hour because we're well-informed and educated, and two for the men. Again, the phone number is 61, not that I'm competitive or anything.
Not at all. Try working with her.
610-758-8810. And we had a call from Dick off air. So here the men are coming to Rod's rescue. And let's see, what did he ask? He said he's retired and he's doing some part-time consulting through a firm that reimburses mileage and expenses. We know what's coming, don't we? My 1099 includes those expenses. They say he can still deduct those items. Is that true?
Absolutely. Yeah. And we see that a lot where not only the compensation they're paying you, but they just lump everything that they cut a check to you for and put it on the 1099. And so absolutely, just put a line item on your Schedule C, reimbursed expenses, mm-hmm. and put the dollar amount. Nothing wrong with that at all.
And Dick, it's interesting though, because sometimes you'll be a consultant and you'll have one firm that you're working for that will do it one way and the other firm will do it another way. So
yes,
you really have to keep good records and keep track of that.
Absolutely.
Okay, so good. Great. Great question, Dick. And it is a confusing item and it happens often. But that's why people need to keep meticulous records and know what to expect. And good business people do that. So folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. We're taking listeners' tax questions. Rod, we often get questions about Social Security.
Yeah, and usually it's a question with a kind of an annoyed tone in the voice because the person, you know, somebody who maybe just starts Social Security for the first time and is doing their tax return, you know, or we're working on their tax return with them, and they say, what do you mean my Social Security benefits are taxable? Didn't I already pay tax on that? And so, yeah, at certain income levels and above, you know, a certain portion, up to as high as 85% of your Social Security benefits could be subject to income tax.
Included in your income. So that could fluctuate. And I just had a call on this morning. The client had some big capital gains, not any that he generated, but that the mutual funds generated. Mm-hmm. The mutual funds pay all these capital gain distributions at the end of the year. His income went up $10,000. And he was shocked to see his Social Security was being included as taxable income.
Absolutely.
So it's not even a real easy formula for us to tell you, because there's a couple different thresholds that you have to pay attention to. One other thing I'll mention as well, some people are sometimes surprised to see their Medicare premiums go up. Typically, we're looking at about $110 a month in a Medicare premium, and then all of a sudden we'll get a call and say, wait, Medicare now is charging me $150 a month.
Why did it double all of a sudden?
Yeah, $150, $190 or something. So let's talk to them about another little threshold to watch for.
Sure, and your Medicare premiums are based on your gross income, and you can go right to the Medicare website and see what those gross income band thresholds mm-hmm. are and what the premiums are. But what they do is they look back 2 years and see what your gross income was 2 years ago, and that's what they base the current year Medicare premium on. So people who do have wild fluctuations in gross income will see their Medicare premiums jump around.
So you want to be kind of aware of that if you're someone who's doing things like Roth IRA conversions or taking gains on your tax return. You might want to manage that a little bit if you want to control those Medicare premiums. They go up for married filing joint at about $170,000 of page one income. And that includes, you have to add back tax exempt income as well for that threshold. And then it goes up even more at $210,000. And then it goes up even more at another threshold. So as Rod said, you could go on Medicare.gov and look for the premium adjustments on your Medicare depending on what your income is.
I'm impressed that you can remember those thresholds.
It's because I have to look at them a lot. Yay, here go the girls. So we have a couple more questions off air. We'll get these in. Okay. We have Nancy. She asked, we downsized a family member's house, donated a bulk of the household goods. Do we have to pay a gift tax on the items we were given that we donated?
No gift tax, no.
No, it's, Nancy, typically when we're talking about household property, personal property, there's not as much value to that. And gifting, we can gift $14,000 a year to any individual and not file any kind of gift tax return. It's interesting because one of the things I was going to put on my questions tonight, mm-hmm. if callers didn't call in, was do I owe income tax on the gift my mother gave me? And do I get a deduction for the gift I made to my kids? Now, one thing that they could do, though, is they could probably take a deduction on Schedule A if they were donating those goods.
Right, and this specifically does say donated here, and that is a common question that I get and I know you get, is how do you value household items and clothing for the purpose of taking a charitable contribution? Are there any, you know, set fixed percentages? Or, you know, and there aren't. And the bottom line is the way you value it is what could that particular item be sold for at a, you know, consignment shop or at a thrift shop?
I think certain organizations like the Salvation Army has, you can go online and they'll give guidance, but it's just
guidelines.
Yep. And so a lot of times I'll tell people, you know, maybe a couple bucks for a shirt. And if you put 20 shirts in a bag, it would be 60, but it can add up. So you want to keep those receipts. And if it's more than $500, sometimes people think there's a limitation of $500. If it's more than $500, we just have to do another form.
Yeah, you have to put a little more information, Form 8283, and put a little more detail on the tax return to claim that clothing and what have you of more than $500, but all very legitimate. Just keep, like Lori said, keep good records on what you've donated, and it is surprising how it can add up.
Okay. Debbie also called, and Debbie asked, she's about to withdraw the full amount from an annuity. So we're going to assume this is an investment, not an IRA, that it's a non-qualified annuity. She did it for investment. She said she's going to withdraw the full amount. And if you have a loss instead of a gain, is it still taxable? And how is it treated on a state return? So to have a loss on an annuity, let's pretend you invested $100,000. And if you take out the money and it's $96,000 and you've not touched anything in between, so we don't see that as often. Yeah. It might have been some kind of a variable annuity, an older one or something that was tied to the market.
Yeah, none of that's taxable.
Yeah, nothing would be taxable if it was truly a loss and there weren't any other adjustments. And I'll talk about other adjustments in a minute. And then how's it treated on the state return? If it's a loss, there's nothing.
Yeah, if it's less than what was put into it, it's not taxable. And then part of me for the federal return, is that loss then deductible on your federal return, either on Schedule A, I believe.
I believe it's Schedule A.
Yes.
Some people will argue that it's an investment business loss on Form 4797, but
I don't buy that argument.
It's a Schedule A miscellaneous itemized deduction.
Yes.
Yeah. So, Debbie, why I was hedging about whether any activity has been done, what I want to caution you on is if someone invests $100,000 in an annuity and you think it's worth $80,000 today, let's say $80,000, and you think you had a loss, but you haven't considered that you took distributions out prior, you have to be careful. But typically what we do see is the annuity companies do keep track of those records. It's rare that they have not tracked that. And they will report to you the taxable amount on that 1099-R.
Right. One of the things you have to be careful of is if it's moved from one contract to another over the years, been exchanged, tracking down what the true cost of it is can be a little tricky.
Yeah, and hopefully they have tracked that. But if they haven't, that's another reason to keep good records. And any gain on an annuity contract that's a non-qualified account would be income taxable for federal, and it's also includable for Pennsylvania, and it shows up as interest income. So it is income taxable for Pennsylvania, any non-qualified annuities held for investment purposes that had gain. I'm trying to think if there was another question. We're almost to the end of the show.
Was there
anything else I was going to say? I don't remember off the top of my head. I wanted to make sure we got those questions in, but
sure.
Go girl power tonight.
The girls did it tonight. Guys made a little run there, but the girls did it.
Yeah. So, Rod, any last thoughts or comments?
No, it's been great to be on the show. You'll be on next week, right?
I have a guest next week.
Okay.
I have attorney Buddy Lesavoy, who's going to join us. And we are going to talk about, we're moving as we get later in tax season, we probably see more sophisticated tax returns and businesses and things like that. So we thought that we would talk about Open for Business, U Inc.
Great.
So
topic.
Talking about different kind of business structures and what people have to watch out for. A lot of people talk about LLCs. A lot of people think that's a corporation. It's not. It's a limited liability company, and a lot of people don't understand it.
Sure.
As far as I'm concerned, if you don't understand it, then maybe you shouldn't be doing it, or you've got to get the right kind of advice.
Right. If people haven't had a chance to call tonight and they come up with a question or just didn't have the question tonight and are working on their taxes this weekend, rYoung@valleynationalgroup.com. Say I was listening to you on the radio and I have this tax question, and please feel free to send me an email.
Okay. And questions can also go through yourfinancialchoices.com, and I can direct those to Rod as well. So we loved the calls tonight. It was a great show.
Great, yes.
I think that it was an appropriate time of year to get that done. I want to thank Judy Ann for being here. We still have a couple minutes, so let me just see if there was anything else I wanted to... we talked about giving to charities. Oh, one of the things that people have asked about cash contributions. Folks, cash contributions don't really float anymore, unless.
Yeah, unless you get get the records that you need, the documentation from the organization that you give the cash to, and it's very clear how much you gave, and you have that written acknowledgement. Cash, otherwise there's no way to really substantiate the cash.
And the IRS made more stringent requirements on that back in 2006 with the Pension Protection Act. Child care credits, a lot of people might miss that. Let's quickly talk about child care credit.
Yeah, child care credit's a great credit if you have, couple, both working, both generating earned income and need to pay for care for a child under the age of 13,
yeah,
I believe,
under
13, there is a credit that can range from 20 to 35% of the amount that you pay for the child care with a cap of
on $6,000.
$6,000, I believe,
right.
Yes.
So
yes.
Don't miss out on that, folks, if you have it. I had someone who didn't think they were going to qualify for it. They send their kids to camps over the summer.
Summer camps qualify.
I said they qualify. Get your receipt. Get your the Y. They sent their kids to the Y. They didn't know after school.
It absolutely qualifies. You need the name of the organization. You need their tax ID number
and their address.
Their address, and you can absolutely take that credit. And then there's the child credit, which can be $1,000 per child and can phase out at certain income levels.
Okay, if you're under 17. So, folks, thanks so much for calling in. Next week, we're going to have attorney Buddy Lesovoy from Lesovoy Butts and Sights talking about Open for Business, U, Inc. Coming up next, Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Rod's email was ryoung@valleynationalgroup.com. And make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, John, for being here as well. Thanks again, Rod. It's been great.
Thanks, Lori.
Have
Thank
a great
you.
Week, everyone.
Yep.
This is WDIY Allentown, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station, your source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of hand-picked music.